Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I would like to inform all parties that today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to John Bateman. Thank you. You may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email at nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. That's nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's call, which will just focus on NOAA's August U.S. and global highlights, along with a three-month outlook and the latest information on the Pacific Ocean heat wave, will feature three short presentations followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded at, and I'll spell it, https://www.ncdc.noaa.gov/sotc/briefings. With that, I'll introduce our speakers. The first presenter is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the August U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. Our second presenter is Dr. Gregory C. Johnson, an oceanographer with NOAA OAR's Pacific Marine Environmental Laboratory, who will provide an update on the marine heat wave occurring in the northeastern Pacific Ocean. Our third presenter is Anthony Artusa, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the monthly and seasonal temperature, precipitation, and drought outlooks for the next 3 months. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in today. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide two with the global temperature. The month of August was characterized by warmer-than-average conditions across much of the global land and ocean surfaces, as seen on the map on the left. Record warm August temperatures were present across parts of the northern and western Pacific Ocean, the Bering Sea, northern and southern parts of North America, the Atlantic Ocean, and Indian Ocean, as well as parts of Africa and Central Asia. Pockets of cooler-than-average conditions were limited to northwestern Canada, the north-central contiguous U.S., western Russia, and parts of Indonesia. However, no land or ocean areas had record cold August temperatures. Averaged as a whole, the global land and ocean temperature for August 2019 was 0.92 degrees Celsius or 1.66 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average, tying with 2015 and 2017 as the second warmest August since global records began in 1880. August of 2016 was warmer. I wanted to highlight the global ocean-only temperature for the month of August was the highest August temperature on record at 0.84 degrees Celsius or 1.51 degrees Fahrenheit above average. Because the month of August marks the end of the Northern Hemisphere's meteorological summer and the Southern Hemisphere meteorological winter, I wanted to briefly highlight the June through August temperature percentile maps on the right. As you can see, spatially it is similar to the August percentile map, with similar regions experiencing record warm June through August temperatures. Averaged as a whole, the global land and ocean surface temperature for the three-month period was 0.93 degrees Celsius or 1.67 degrees Fahrenheit above average and was the second warmest such period in the 140-year record. Again, June through August of 2016 was warmer. The Northern Hemisphere land and ocean surface temperature tied with 2016 as the warmest summer on record, and the Southern Hemisphere winter tied with 2015 as the second warmest winter on record. Moving now to slide three, very quickly, the first 8 months of the year for the global land and ocean temperature were warmer than average. Overall, this was the third highest January through August temperature on record behind 2016 and 2017. It is virtually certain that 2019 will end up among the five warmest years on record and will most likely finish among the second, third, or fourth warmest year on record. Now zooming into the U.S. on slide number four, the contiguous U.S. had a warmer than average August at 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit above average. This value tied with August of 1955 as the 13th warmest August in the 125-year record. Above average temperatures were present across the west coast to the deep south and the eastern coast. Meanwhile, near to cooler than average temperatures were present across the northern plains to the Ohio Valley during the month, and this was attributed to a trough over eastern North America, which helped bring cool Canadian temperatures to the region. Only two states, South Dakota and Iowa, had below average temperatures for the month, while Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas had their second warmest August on record. In terms of precipitation, it was pretty much near normal to wetter than average conditions across much of the contiguous U.S., with areas of below average precipitation stretching from California to Texas and across parts of Michigan and Maryland. Nebraska and Kansas had their wettest August on record, while Arizona and Utah had their sixth driest August on record. Moving now to slide number five, looking at the summer, the nation's temperatures, it was above average for the contiguous U.S. The spatial pattern for the contiguous U.S. was similar to the August map, where warmer than average conditions were mainly present across the west coast to the southwest and into the deep south, as well as the eastern coast, while everywhere else had near average conditions. Delaware, New Jersey, and Florida had their fifth warmest summer, while New Mexico had its sixth warmest summer. However, no state had a summer temperature that ranked below average. The state of Alaska, which is not pictured here, had its second warmest summer on record with a temperature that was 4.1 degrees Fahrenheit above average. Summer of 2004 was Alaska's warmest summer on record. Looking at precipitation now, much of the west had below average precipitation, while the eastern half had near to above average precipitation. South Dakota had its fifth wettest summer, and Kentucky had its sixth wettest summer on record. Arizona had its driest summer on record, while California, Utah, and New Mexico had a top 10 dry summer. Moving now to slide number six. This map, drought map, was released earlier this morning. As you can see, drought has been rapidly intensifying across parts of the contiguous U.S., specifically the lower Midwest and Mid-Atlantic states to the Gulf Coast as well as the Midwest. However, beneficial rains have helped alleviate some of the dryness and drought conditions across parts of the Great Lakes into the Northwest as well as in southwestern Alaska and southern Puerto Rico. Overall, as of September 17, only 14.1% of the contiguous U.S. was in some type of drought, and that is an increase of about 5 percentage points since late August. That is all I have, and now I'll turn it over to Greg Johnson.
Thank you, Ira. So I'm going to talk, starting on slide seven, on a marine heat wave that is developing in the Northeast Pacific Ocean. As Ira said, on slide two, we saw record warmth in the Northeastern Pacific in August 2019. But I'd like to draw your attention first to historical conditions. So we'll look at the blob, which was a nickname for a marine heat wave that developed in late 2013 and stretched through 2016. So these plots here are surface temperature, sea surface temperature anomalies for seasons. On the upper left is July through September. The orange, the yellow to reddish brown colors are anomalously warm. You can see that conditions were near normal in July through September 2013. However, we had a relatively calm, benign fall over in 2013 over the Pacific Ocean, and warm temperatures started to develop in January through March 2013, which is the middle panel on the left on slide seven. You can see record warmth then. Temperatures were 4 degrees Celsius over normal, that's over 8 degrees Fahrenheit, or almost 8 degrees Fahrenheit. Then that was a a very large event in April through June. It moderated somewhat, but it was still quite warm compared to historical standards. July through September, it started to move onto the coast, the lower left panel in this slide. And in October through December 2014, it had moved ashore. And there were some very warm anomalies. There was a El Nino the following year that continued, and those anomalies continued associated with that El Nino. And that resulted in reduced fisheries. Salmon fisheries were reduced. It resulted in a harmful algal bloom along the entire west coast of North America. It resulted in seabird die-offs and in marine mammal strandings. We're very interested to see if the this marine heat wave, another marine heat wave, is developing. And if you go to slide 8, you can see, again, temperature anomalies. These are at 50 decibars, which is how oceanographers measure depth in the ocean. It's roughly equivalent to 50 meters. And we have, again, seasonal temperature anomalies at this depth. So the upper left panel is June, July, August 2014. You can see the blob there. The middle upper panel in this slide is June, July, August 2015. A year later, you can see those very warm conditions off the west coast of North America persisting in the upper right panel to June, July, August 2016. By 2017, the marine heat wave had dissipated. 2018, again, warm conditions off Alaska, but not quite as warm as in previous years. But we have, in June, July, August 2019, very warm conditions in the Northeast Pacific, record warm for August in some locations. Now I'm going to drill down quickly on the next slide, slide 9, into a depth time plot of temperature anomalies. So we measure temperature anomalies by a fleet of robotic profilers that profile actually from 2,000 decibars, 2 kilometers depth, up to the ocean surface and send these data back. There are over 4,000 out there. They're called the Argo floats. And they allow us to measure the subsurface temperature of the ocean. And that's important because the ocean carries a vast amount of heat. For every to warm a parcel of water that's a gram in weight requires 4 times more heat than to warm a similar parcel of air. And the ocean weighs 280 times more than the atmosphere. So the ocean, it takes 1,000 times more heat to warm the ocean a degree than it does the atmosphere, heat energy, that is. So this is temperature anomalies versus time. We're going from 2010 through August 2019, and we're going from the surface down to 250 decibars or 250 meters. And you can see that in 2013, the blob, this marine heat wave, began developing in the center of the Northeast Pacific there. That's that little magenta star in the plot in the upper left. And those surface conditions continued through 2016. Winter of 2017, we had a relatively strong winter, and that dissipated the marine heat wave. If you go to the upper right of the plot, you can see again that there does seem to be some warm conditions developing in 2018 and continuing into 2019, and that heat is now reaching close to 100 decibars, 100 meters depth in the ocean. So this is a significant amount of heat is building up in the ocean, so it's too soon to say whether this will blossom into a long-lived event. We'll have to wait for the winter to see if that heat continues to build up. But that's where we are now, and I'm going to turn it over to Anthony.
Okay, thank you very much, Greg. Good morning, everyone. If we could continue on slide 10, we'll see sea surface temperatures and the El Nino Southern Oscillation. ENSO is a common acronym that we use, so I may slip back into that periodically, but it does stand for El Nino Southern Oscillation. And you can notice first we have our average SST departures from normal, so we can compare them to normal and see if they're above or below. Right now we have below normal sea surface temperatures, or SSTs, in the eastern and the central equatorial Pacific. That's a relatively recent development. We have above normal sea surface temperatures in the western, especially the west central Pacific. And then as you move away from the equator, we have a large coverage of above normal sea surface temperatures across most of the Pacific, including the warm blob that Greg was just referring to, also the Gulf of Mexico and much of the Atlantic. At the current time, we have the El Nino Southern Oscillation is currently in its neutral phase, so it's not El Nino and it's not La Nina. In terms of the forecast, we think that the neutral conditions are going to continue throughout the fall, the winter, and well into the spring of next year. The chances of this are about 3 in 4, or 75% during the autumn, and then those probabilities drop throughout the winter and the spring to about 55 to 60%. So as you can see on the plot to the left, the gray bars represent the chances for a neutral event, which are the dominant one, and then the red bars represent the chances for an El Nino, followed by the blue, which represents the chances for a La Nina. Okay, so if we go on to slide 11, we can see the latest monthly forecast for October, one of the most challenging times of the year to forecast for as we come out of the summer season and go into the transition into the autumn. We have the temperatures on the left-hand side and the precipitation on the right. Now, before describing the forecast, just to mention that what goes into these forecasts are we use the latest statistical and dynamical model information. We also look at long-term trends in both temperature and precipitation. We like to look at what the ENSO is doing, whether it's an El Nino or La Nina. Unfortunately, we don't have that luxury this time with neutral conditions. We also look at sea surface temperatures and consider things like sea ice and soil moisture. So that gives you a rough idea of what goes into these forecasts. So first, looking at the temperatures for October, you can see that the entire lower 48 and also Alaska are expected to be above average. The only differences really are in the probabilities. So you can see that the highest chances for above normal are indicated over western and northern Alaska. That is connected both with the sea surface temperatures that are quite warm in that area, and also for the North Slope, a delay in the onset of sea ice. And then down over the lower 48, trends and the dynamical models and statistical models play a strong role for the increased chances for above normal in parts of the Southwest and California, and also across the eastern, let's say, quarter or so of the lower 48 states. For the October precipitation, we actually have some smaller areas of above normal precipitation that are highlighted in green. Those are over parts of the northern tier of the U.S., say Washington State, northern Idaho, the Alaska Panhandle, and also northern parts of Minnesota. That is connected to the prevailing winds aloft, what we call the prevailing westerlies, and we think they will be focused over that part of the country, and those are very important as to the steering of the surface weather systems. In the south, we have above normal over the southwest and also over the mid-Atlantic and southern Atlantic states. That is tied in large part to anticipated tropical activity that's still supposed to be, we're still well within the, you know, the middle portion of the tropical cyclone season. So that is a key ingredient there. And also in the east, long-term trends are favored to be wet in that area. The signal for below in the south central U.S. is a rather weak one, and it is based on a weak consensus of some of the different models. So if we move on to slide 12, we can see the seasonal outlook for October, November, and December. Temperatures are on the left, precipitation on the right. And you can see that the temperature pattern is pretty similar to the monthly in that just about the entire country is predicted to be above normal for many of the same reasons. We do have an area of weakness, or the probabilities are just not expected to be not quite as high as for much of the rest of the country. That extends from the northern plains and the upper Mississippi Valley down into the southeast. And that is in large part that's coming from the variations and discrepancies between the dynamical and statistical models. And also the north central part of the country tends to have a lot more variable weather conditions, which makes it trickier to forecast as well. For the precipitation, you'll notice that we have above normal for Alaska. Also for much of the western and central part of the lower 48 states, and also for the mid-Atlantic and the southeast. Again, the tropical systems play a key role in here for the southeast and for the southwest. This is still well within the tropical system seasons in the Atlantic and both the eastern Pacific. And we also have a chance for below average precipitation across parts of Oregon and California. So finally, going on to slide 13, we'll take a look at the U.S. seasonal drought outlook, and that starts from right now and goes through the end of the year. In the areas that are shown in brown, we expect the drought to persist, to continue. So you can see over the southwest, for example, where the southwest monsoon failed to really come in significantly this year. It was mostly a dud across the southwest. Also parts of Texas and parts of the southeast where it's been hot and dry, and they just have not had much of a chance to see some recovery. In the areas that are shown in the tan or silverish color, we expect the drought to remain but improve by at least one category in the U.S. drought monitor. So some improvement is expected there. In the areas of olive green color, that's where drought removal is likely, and that's where we are expected to see the drought monitor end up with a D0 or even nothing on there, so the drought is being removed. That could be tied to the rainy season, for example, in the Pacific Northwest. Or also, in the case of East Texas, we have our what is left of tropical storm Imelda, which is now a tropical depression. So as that moves north, that'll dump some heavy rain across parts of East Texas and the Ark-La-Tex region. And then finally, in the areas in yellow, we have where drought development is thought to be more likely. And you can see those areas that are highlighted over the, let's say, the central southern Appalachians region and also over parts of central Texas. Okay, so for that, that concludes the climate part, and I would like to turn things back over to John.
All right, thanks, Anthony. And now we'll take specific questions from the call participants. As a reminder, our speakers will focus on NOAA's August U.S. and global highlights, along with the three-month outlook and the latest information on the Pacific Ocean heat wave. Also, please be sure to identify who you would like to answer the question if possible. Operator, please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question.
Thank you. At this time, we'll begin our question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star then one, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly when prompted. If you would like to withdraw a question, press star two. One moment while we wait on our first question. Our first question comes from Brian Sullivan, I'm sorry, from the Bloomberg News. Brian, your line is now open.
Thank you. The question I have is, if the blob returns, what would be the implications for weather across the U.S. and North America?
That's a good question, and it's something that I'm not an expert in, actually, and I apologize for that. But there are effects that sea surface temperature, very warm sea surface temperature, does have. It can warm the winters in the Pacific Northwest a little bit, but that's about all I know.
Anyone from CPC want to jump in?
Sure. I can take a stab at it as well. Well, like Greg said, it could have a warming effect overall on the winter in the Pacific Northwest. And also, what we often see is a ridge, an upper-level ridge form or be associated over the eastern Pacific with this warmer water. And, of course, that could have some influence on the circulation downstream. But it's still, I don't think at this point we can really say too much because we don't know how long this this warm blob, as it's referred to, is going to last. Things could change, you know, by the start of the winter season.
Excellent. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Adam Aiton from ENE News. Adam, your line is now open.
Hey, thanks for taking my question, guys, and thanks for doing the call. I believe my question is for Dr. Johnson. In terms of comparing the global ocean temperatures, is August typically the warmest month for those things, or are there other months when we can expect global ocean temperatures to be even warmer?
I don't think you necessarily pick out, are we talking about anomalies here or just global ocean temperatures in general?
I guess global anomalies too, but I guess in terms of like is August typically the warmest month? Like if this is the warmest August and August is the warmest month, that seems more significant to me than if August isn't the warmest month, right?
Right. So in terms of global ocean temperatures, of course we have two hemispheres and the southern hemisphere there's more ocean down there. So August is not summer. It's winter in the southern hemisphere. So I'm not sure, actually, which is...
Hi, Adam.
Which is the, yes. Yeah.
Ira Sanchez-Lugo with NCEI. I can verify that information. We do have the climatology. I would just need you to, if possible, send an email to John Bateman.
Sure.
And I can, once I get back to my office, I can tell you what month is climatologically warmer for the ocean, if that's okay with you.
Sure, thanks.
Okay, great.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Ira. Yeah.
Our next question comes from Brad Plummer from the New York Times. Brad, your line is now open.
Hey, thanks so much for doing this, and I think this question is for Dr. Johnson, although it could be for anyone. Do we know much about the sort of broader climate context around this blob in the Pacific Northwest? Like, has there been research done on whether this is something that is being driven by climate change or possibly the sort of thing we might expect to see more as oceans continue to warm, or is it more complicated than that? I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, what we know so far about the broader climate context around it, or whether it's way too early to really be able to say anything there.
Certainly the oceans, this is Greg Johnson, the oceans are substantially warmer than they have been in the past. They're warming up. They are absorbing a massive amount of heat, really. And that does shift the baseline for marine heat waves like this. If you have warmer background conditions, it's easier for the temperatures to rise above normal and stay above normal for longer. So it's a little bit like, there's an old sports analogy that's used, it's a little bit like being having a baseball player on steroids. It's not guaranteed that they will, you know, that you can't say they hit a home run because they were on steroids, but they're more likely to hit them more often.
Okay, operator, let's take another question, please.
Our next question comes from Doyle Rice from USA Today. Doyle, your line is now open.
Hey, thanks for doing this call, as always. Just looking at the temperature probability for October through December. I'm just wondering if we can say all 50 states are looking for an above average, warmer than average fall. And I'm just wondering what Hawaii, if we can include Hawaii in that, just so we could say all 50 states should see a warmer than average October through December period.
Okay. Hi, this is Anthony. Yeah, definitely for the 49 states, you know, when you consider the three-month period, it looks like it'll be warmer than normal. As for Hawaii, we don't really show these on this map, and that is something that I would have to check just to be certain. And also to remember that this is a 90-day average, so it doesn't mean that every day in the period will be above normal. There will be some days undoubtedly when it's below normal, some when it's near normal. But when you look at the 90-day period as a whole, we think it will be dominated by above normal temperatures. But that is a good question about Hawaii, and that is something I would have to get back to you on.
Okay, thank you. I can send an email to someone there, and they can get in touch with me.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah, and you're welcome to send me an email, Doyle. This is John Bateman.
Okay, will do.
Our next question comes from Brian Sullivan from the Bloomberg News. Brian, your line is now open.
Thank you. I thought of something else I wanted to ask. I meant to ask before. In addition to the marine heat wave in the Northeast Pacific there, you know, it looks like the North Atlantic is also quite warm. Is there any reason for that, any implications that can be teased out of that?
Ira, is this something that your expertise could help answer?
I don't look into the reasons why things happen. That would be more Greg Johnson or CC. I look into what happened and how unusual it was.
Is it unusual to be that warm, I guess?
Yeah, it's also hard, this is Anthony, it'll also be hard for me to comment on as well since we really focus on over the United States, and usually the Pacific, which is upstream of the United States in most cases, the flow will be from the Pacific. So that's the key area that we would focus on. That's why with El Nino we tend to focus on the east central Pacific especially. It's not that the Atlantic isn't as important, but we just because that's mostly downstream of the United States, we don't look at it as often.
And hey, Brian, this is John Bateman. You're also welcome to reach out to me, and I can connect you with our colleagues at NOS as well if you want.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay. And we have another question?
Our next question comes from Lisa Kasky from the Argus Leader. Lisa, your line is now open.
Yes, hi. I'm a reporter in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and right now we're facing our second record-breaking flood, and I was just wondering, you know, if you could kind of explain why we've been so hard hit by precipitation in the plains and whether this year has been an anomaly or if this is kind of becoming the norm for the Great Plains.
Okay, this is Anthony again. That's an excellent question. At least for now, I think it's safe to say that this is more of an anomaly. You know, right away I think back of the floods of 1993 in the summer, and there are some parallels with that. But right now this is mostly based on a synoptic pattern or a kind of a weather time scale based pattern. And you get storms that are coming down through the same regions over and over again. So that's why you can get a lot of, you know, above normal precipitation. You get a lot of flooding, and these rivers can be, you know, and soil moisture, for example, can be super saturated. And that's been the problem with a lot of the Midwest, the upper Midwest, throughout the past few months. It's not quite as wet now as it has been, but still there's a lot of moisture still left in there.
Okay.
Great, thanks. And operator, are there any other further questions?
I'm showing no further questions at this time.
All right, wonderful. Well, if there are no further questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time. Thank you so much. And to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end by reminding you to mark your calendars for some upcoming releases. The September release of the U.S. Climate Highlights will be on October 8th. The September release for the Global Climate Highlights will be on October 17th. Also, next month, in lieu of our regular call, NOAA will issue its annual Winter Outlook on October 17th at 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Finally, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov Media Advisory site today. If you have any further informational needs, you can email me, John Jones Bateman. I'll give you my email address. It's john.jones-bateman@noaa.gov. My contact information is also available at the top of the media advisory. And this concludes today's call. Thanks so much.
This concludes today's conference. All participants may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please stand by for the post-conference. Thank you.